You are Locked On Washington Football Team, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Washington Football with your host of the Locked On Washington Football Team podcast, David Harrison and Chris Russell. But we're not hosting the show for you guys. You can find Chris over at Team 980, 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, and on the Odyssey app. And you can also find him covering your Washington football team in writing for SI.com. Find me covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for the Locked On Bucks podcast and in writing for BucksNation.com, a part of SB Nation. And you can find Chris on Twitter at WrestleMania621. Find me at DHarrison82. Find the show at LockedWFTPod at all of your major podcast platforms and also on the Odyssey app. Chris, hitting the middle of the week, we've got some more news coming out of the Washington football team franchise. Some new players added to the roster. One a little bit more exciting probably than the other, but really more for potential, more so than it is actual expected productivity.
Yeah, and this is an interesting one, right? Because we certainly, David, remember the history of a guy like Antonio Gates, who had such a prodigious career for the Chargers organization. And we've seen this from time to time. We see it with Mo Alie-Cox. Even though he's not a stud by any means, he's certainly a useful piece for the Indianapolis Colts. Tight ends seem to be like the position that you convert basketball players into in the NFL. And that's exactly what Washington is trying to do by signing Chilean-born and former Tulane University hoopster Sammys Reyes. I'll be honest with you, I didn't know a whole lot about him. I had heard a little murmur or whatever, but, you know, obviously since the signing on Wednesday, or I should say on Tuesday, have learned a lot more about him, worked out at Florida's pro day. I think he did 31 bench reps at 225. So, you know, he's strong like bull. And he's also 6'5" and a half, and he can run, and he's an athlete, and we know he's strong, and we know he's a developmental guy. But this is an organization, and this is a tight end position coach. I think I've mentioned Pete Hayner before, like, you know, when we've talked about the tight end and Logan Thomas's development and Jeremy Sprinkle's non-development and others. Pete Hayner is one of the best tight end coaches in the NFL. And I'm not just saying that because he's here. I mean, he was widely regarded as that in Carolina, where he helped Greg Olsen and Chris Mannix, who just signed with Jacksonville, as one of the better blocking tight ends. And even before that in San Francisco with Vernon Davis and Delanie Walker, this guy has cultivated and developed tight ends. And hopefully Washington has stumbled on a raw but very talented athlete and physical freak here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got all upside here, and there's no risk, you know, involved in bringing him in. It's all reward if you get any. If you don't, then, you know, you gave him a chance, you gave him an opportunity. And going back to our conversation with Ben Kotwicka, you know, about a month ago, he mentioned it. We've heard other coaches mention it in the past, that really to be an effective coach in any sport, but especially in the National Football League, and then to be one of the great coaches, you have to be a really great teacher. So when you have a prospect or a player with a lot of potential who has a lot of athletic traits and skills, but doesn't have quite all of the NFL skills that you need, or the tight end specific position, specific type of skills that you need, you bring them in and you try to study with them, you try to develop them, and you do what you can to see what you can tap into. So this is really a great opportunity. It's a leadership challenge for a coach to come in and have a guy like this, but it's also really a great opportunity because he doesn't have the bad habits either. Like, you're getting a guy that's got a clean slate, so you can literally build him into the tight end you want as much as he can get, you know, out of him anyway. So it's going to be interesting to watch. It could be nothing. It could be something really amazing. But either way, it's a good story. It's a guy who has been working his butt off and went out there at the Florida Pro Day and really kind of showed up and showed out in front of scouts and personnel and has earned himself an opportunity to live out a dream. I know at one point his dream was to play in the NBA, so I don't know if this is the dream, but it's a dream. And anytime you get a person having that type of opportunity, it's a great thing to see. So good news.
Yeah, and I would say, listen, it's worth the shot, yeah, right? Absolutely. I mean, he was going to be a part of the International Pathway Program, and there was no guarantee Washington was going to be able to get him that way, because they just had their turn in that program last year with a kid named David Botta, who's still on the practice squad, or still on now the 90-man roster, I should say. But the bottom line is they went out and they prioritized. It's a need position, as we've discussed. They lost Sprinkle. They let go of Thaddeus Moss. They don't have much else outside of Tamarick Hemingway and Logan Thomas. So this is a great opportunity for him to come here. And the question is will they now still draft another one? And I believe that will be the case. And we'll talk about that in terms of our positional rankings later on in this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And then of course the Washington football team also added depth to another position. Well, a couple of positions really with the versatility, but on the offensive line in offensive lineman Bo. And I'm going to butcher his last name, Chris.
Yeah, so am I. So I'm going to do the best we can and say it's Bo Benshaw. Bo Benshaw, yeah, is how I believe, and I remember his name being pronounced. Benshaw, spelled Benzschaul. Now, who is Ben? I'm sorry, not Ben, Bo Benshaw. See, that the double B is killing me right here, because I've called him Ben a couple, yeah, of times, but it's Ben is part of his last name. It's Bo Benshaw. He's played center with the Detroit Lions practice squad for much of the last 2 years, taking some first team reps, very little NFL experience, special teams really only, but at Wisconsin, he was considered a pretty good offensive lineman and a versatile one at that. Now, again, mentioned he's worked primarily at center in Detroit on their practice squad and with their coaching staff, their old coaching staff. He was let go, caught on with Houston, and then let go with them. But he played right tackle and a lot of right guard at Wisconsin. And one thing you do at Wisconsin, if you're on the offensive line, you can run block, right? Now, that's not the book on him necessarily. That's actually considered a weakness. So it'll be interesting to see where he's at in that, but he's got to be well taught and well coached in that area. So I'll be interested to see what they got out of him. And you mentioned that multi-position versatility, so important. Listen, you can't make this roster if you're not going to be able to play center, right guard, and left guard, period. I don't expect him to play tackle, but maybe he can. He's going to have to play all three positions to have a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you, it's not a move that's going to move the needle all that much right now with fans of the franchise, of course, but you will, you know, you can look across the NFL and there are examples where moves like this pay off really big at the right times. And I'm reminded of a guy like Aaron Stinney from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who has played in his career 12 games in the National Football League, but he's also played three postseason games against the New Orleans Saints, the Green Bay Packers, and the Kansas City Chiefs, and helped the Tampa Bay Buccaneers win Super Bowl 55. So, hey, Bo Benshaw, we got to learn his name because I hate doing this to him. I'm sure he's used to it, but I want to learn how to say this guy's name because he deserves it. But hey, that could be a name that comes up in the future for this team on a successful path. So don't sleep on Bo any further. But we're gonna get into our first break, Chris, and we're gonna do so thanks to our friends over at Built Bar.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we can get Bo Benshaw a Built Bar, huh? Try saying that 10 times fast. Bo Benshaw, Built Bar. I can't even say it once, David, but here's what I can say. Built Bar is awesome. They even say they're deliciouser. I just say they're awesomer. How about that? 6 new flavors, 12 originals, nut, non-nut flavors. Of course, bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew, no matter what the flavor is, right? Even some flavors that you wouldn't think necessarily go with the chocolate covering and the chocolate coating, delicious. Whatever flavor they have, again, covered in soft in chocolate, 100%, and they are great for you. That's the best part. You can eat a Built Bar and not feel bad. Low in calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, high in fiber. Great for any kind of diet, including keto, baby. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. That's the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. And if you're Bo Benshaw, maybe you'll get even a better discount than that.
Get more of the sports news you need in less time. The Locked On Today podcast. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Segment 2 here midweek at the Locked On Washington Football Team podcast. David Harrison, Chris Russell, back here to talk about drinking Chris, because that's the thing that a lot of sports fans do. And when your team is struggling, we tend to do it a little bit more. Of course, if you are out there drinking, please do so responsibly. Just a little bit of advice from my own personal life experience, as well as many other people's. And people study anything these days, but they also study sports drinking and behavior. And apparently there's a study that's been that was published recently, Chris, that says that, among other things, on average, sports fans just kind of in general consume 3.7 alcoholic drinks watching a sporting event, whether they're at home or whether at the live event. And apparently MMA and UFC enthusiasts lead the pack with the highest consumption level of alcohol, which is interesting. I don't know if fist fighting and alcohol really are supposed to mix. Usually the mixture of alcohol leads to the fist fight. So while you have alcohol mixing with the fist fighting, I don't know if that's really such a good idea. But then some other interesting data came with that study as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Like, esports of all things has the highest percentage, higher than the NBA, MMA, UFC, NFL, and NHL on percentage of respondents in this study of about 1,700 plus people, David, who binge drink. So esports, 53%. How about that? What I found interesting and what I thought we could get into here, if you don't mind, is like a team by team look at the NFL fan intoxication level. And also, the study also expanded to smoking marijuana. Again, something that we know is much more, much less taboo in today's day and age than it used to be. But we, again, caution all the proper consumption and all that stuff, right? We're not encouraging anybody. This is just a study done by Lines.com. So if I asked you what fan base was the highest fan base in terms of binge drinking and smoking marijuana, before you looked at the results, and I don't know if you've looked at the results yet, what would you guess?
I have looked at the results, but I will be as honest as I can. And I would, so for drinking, I would have absolutely, I would have said the Buffalo Bills fan base. And I lived in upstate New York for a period of time for the last 4 years of my military career. Sure. I've been to Bills games. I know Bills fans. Those folks can put it away, and they're not shy about putting it away, whether it's at a barbecue, whether it's at someone's house, or whether it's at the game. They'll drink while they're falling through tables, as we've seen on videos time and time again. And unfortunately, it doesn't always go well, but for the most part, it goes well usually, and it's a good time. So I would definitely have guessed the Buffalo Bills. And then for the marijuana part, I probably would have gone with the Raiders, the Rams, or the Chargers. And I'm gonna be completely honest here. It's because it's California, and it's because the first thing that comes to mind is Snoop Dogg. So that's why I would have gone with one of those teams.
And there are other states where marijuana, you know, is legal. I remember going to a Washington Redskin then Denver Bronco game in 2013, and wandering around the streets of downtown Denver. And pretty much, how would you say, maybe getting under the influence because of the aroma and because of the output in the air. And again, I was doing nothing wrong because it was legal there, and I wasn't even smoking. But interesting kind of perspective. So the data showed that the Atlanta Falcons fan base, which I was not expecting, not just at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Our understanding is this is on game day, right? At home, at the stadium, outside the stadium, what have you. Obviously, you're not going to smoke marijuana inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But the Atlanta Falcons, 86% of their fans binge drink. 77% of their fans on game day smoke marijuana. They are tops across the board in each of those two categories. The Jacksonville Jaguars are a close second. 86% of their fans binge drink. 76% smoke marijuana. Where does the Washington football team come in, David? You might ask, right? Not bad. 57% of their fans binge drink, and only 48% of their fans smoke marijuana on game day. That's well above the last place teams, and the last team for both categories is the Patriots. 42% binge drinking, 31% marijuana. I was shocked by this. If you had to watch the Dallas Cowboys every Sunday, wouldn't you binge drink or smoke marijuana? Instead, they are number two in binge drinking at 46%, and the Dallas Cowboys are number three in terms of respondents in this survey by Lines.com of smoking marijuana at only 34%.
Yeah, a little bit surprised. The New England Patriots fans are, I'm not so surprised, because they want to, you know, they want to absorb every moment they can of it. I mean, you know, now that Julian Edelman's retired, maybe they're going to pick up just a little bit more. But that's not so much surprise. The Detroit Lions being so low, third least in binge drinking, and then fourth least in marijuana, like, that's a little bit surprising. But I mean, at the top there, I mean, if I was a fan of a team that lost a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl, I'd probably drink a little bit more when I watched them too. And then the Jacksonville Jaguars, I mean, nobody can really blame them, I suppose. Again, hopefully you're quote unquote binge drinking in a safe manner, but you know what I mean. Those are hard things to live through. So that's, I mean, to me, that's loyalty, right? So it's listed as binge drinking, but I'm looking at it as loyalty. That's how you stay loyal to the brand, as they like to say. And so Kudos to those guys for trying to do that, at least.
I wonder if the binge drinking from the Falcons fans is from the lower concession prices at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I mean, if you're charging $4 for a beer or $5 for a beer, people are much more likely to get absolutely loaded. Now, the whole marijuana thing, I don't know how that gets metered out.
Yeah, I don't know how that really rolls into it. I can honestly say that, I mean, I've had like a beer or maybe even two at, you know, a sporting event, usually a baseball game. I've never really been a big drinker at even a basketball game or a football game, just because especially hockey. Like, I don't think I've ever had an alcoholic beverage at a hockey game, because there's so much going on. I don't know. Like, it's just never really crossed my mind. But baseball, I mean, that's kind of a relaxed atmosphere. Like, you know, you could have 10 minutes before anything really happens. So, I mean, I've definitely had some drinks at a baseball game, but I can honestly say I've never binge drank at any sporting events in my life anyway.
All right, a little fun little study from lines.com. We thank them for doing that, because I wouldn't have even thought about that, but over 1,700, and again, we should caution, do everything responsible. 1,700 fans, right, representing essentially parts of 32 teams. It doesn't mean that those numbers are truly representative of every part of any fan base. But it was interesting for how bad the Washington football team / Redskins have been over the Dan Snyder plus era, the last 30 years, that they didn't rank higher on that list.
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, like you said, good data there, good information there. Interesting things that you may or may not have predicted to be right, but if there are other things that you can predict to be right, they're going to be prop bets, and there's some good ones coming up, and you can find those over at betonline.ag, because they are the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action, whether it's NFL draft, prop bets coming up, MVP 2021, NFL MVP odds. If you want to put some money down on Tom Brady to be the next MVP of the NFL, you can do so with 5-1 odds over at betonline.ag right now. Ryan Fitzpatrick, not on that list, but that might change as the season gets going. We'll have to see what happens. But other than that, you can also bet on NBA action, hockey action. Baseball is underway as well. You can even bet on awards, TV shows, and reality TV with real-time update odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Betonline.ag has you covered for all your news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head over to the website on your computer or using your mobile device to sign up today, and you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON on your first deposit at betonline.ag for a 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. April 19th through the 26th, listen to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, featuring analysis from NFL experts Michael Irvin, Jason LaConfora, and Michael Lombardi, our local experts for every team making trades and picking the next stars of their team. Subscribe to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, presented by Locked On and Odyssey on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your home, your audio home, for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matters to you. That's AUDACY. Download the app today. Chris, I'm not going to lie, it just kind of hit me that Michael Irvin, Jason LaConfora, and Michael Lombardi are going to be judging our selection for the Washington football team in this mock draft as well. I'm not going to say what position we drafted in, because we may have traded, but it just kind of hit me that those three gentlemen will be judging our selection. So fingers crossed.
Do you think they're going to laugh at us?
I don't think so. I think that they're going to like the move for us, but they're going to be surprised that other teams, especially one inside the division, didn't actually make that move before we got the chance to.
I agree with you. And again, that is a well-designed shield to what we actually did with pick number 19. Did we trade up? Did we select a left tackle? Did we select something else? You'll have to find out again in the Locked On Mock NFL Draft. All right, David, one thing we wanted to start doing on this episode, and we will do this every episode here on forward as best we can. We might have to schedule some things slightly differently, but we plan on doing this every episode, is a top three positional rank for us, for the Washington football team at every position across the board, offense and defense, leading into the NFL draft. We've touched on the quarterback position a lot, so we thought we'd start on offense tonight, or on this particular episode, I should say, and stay on, again, offense, but not do quarterback. We'll get to quarterback soon. So when we're doing this, again, we're ranking not necessarily the best talent, but the best fits for the Washington football team, top three inside the position group area. And we're going to start with tight end. And I want to tee you up for your top three at tight end and give us a, you know, maybe a brief reason why you rank them this way.
Yeah. So my number one tight end that I think would fit best with the Washington football team is actually Brevin Jordan out of Miami of Florida. And I know we've seen him mock to this team on a couple of mock draft Mondays, but we've also seen some other tight ends mock to this team and for other reasons. And I will say that Brevin Jordan, better receiver than blocker, but when I watch him, I see a willing blocker. And I think really at the end of the day, the biggest thing you need out of a tight end that's not known for blocking is the willingness to get dirty, the willingness to get physical. I see the willingness in Brevin. I don't know that he'll ever be a top shelf blocking tight end, but I think in this day and age, this National Football League, you need a tight end that can catch the ball. Now, if they can block with it, then that's great. But if you have just a blocking tight end, you're not going to really be able to use them all that well. You're not going to be able to do things to defenses that they don't want you to do to them. So I look at Brevin Jordan. I see that top shelf-ish in this class anyway, receiving ability, the willingness to block. So I rely kind of what we were talking about in segment one, that teaching, that coaching, to turn him into at least an adequate or acceptable blocker in the National Football League to be able to help the Washington football team offense.
All right, so you're going with Brevin Jordan, and you want me to do my number one here, or do you want to go on with your...
Yeah, I think let's go back and forth.
Okay.
I think that'd be fun.
I'm going to go with Tommy Tremble of Notre Dame for my number one, because... and I love what you said about Jordan, and I guess I'll get to him in a sec here. Tremble to me, now, again, I'm not a coach, and I'm not watching game tape, so I'm just watching what I can watch at Notre Dame. Tremble to me seemed like the best blocker of the top-tier products at tight end. Now, he might not be the high-end athlete and pass catcher that Brevin Jordan is, who I love, out of Miami, but I looked and I saw more than willing. I saw a jackhammer, especially in space, in different angles, different wham blocks, that type of thing. And to me, that's the one thing that has really been missing, and really that Logan Thomas doesn't necessarily provide. And I'm not even sure about the new tight end or anybody, quite honestly, on this Washington roster. Tremble to me seems like the most willing blocker and a more than serviceable pass catcher. So I went with him. Now, I should caution you, I don't mean, certainly not in the first round, I would even question whether he would be the right pick at 51. I might be more talking about in the third round here with one of their two third round picks.
Yeah, absolutely. And Brevin Jordan too, he's a day two guy. I probably wouldn't go 51 like you said with Tremble. I'd probably look at him as a third round type of guy as well. And yeah, Tommy Tremble's my number two guy for all the reasons you just said. I mean, when you talk about the ability to block from the tight end position, Tommy Tremble's everything that you want in a blocking tight end. The reason I put Brevin Jordan above him is because Tommy Tremble is also a willing receiver, but there are certain things you can't teach a guy, you know, too much further than what they already do. And he just doesn't run routes very clean. He doesn't get off of defenders very clean. He doesn't have the greatest hands in the world. And hands is kind of one of those things you can either catch or you can't. And when you're a receiving tight end, you just have to be able to catch the ball. So when I look at Tommy Tremble, if I look at Tommy Tremble, especially in his rookie season, if I'm trotting him out there in line as a tight end or even spread out, you're looking at him and the defense kind of keying in that this is probably a run play more likely than not. And if I'm using a tight end as basically a blocker, I would rather use a backup offensive lineman, make him an eligible guy, put him out there as a blocker, because they know you're running either way, unless Tommy Trumbull can figure out a way to unlock his receiving ability that Notre Dame wasn't able to do. And Notre Dame may not be churning out, you know, top tier NFL talent from the tight end position, but they have developed some pretty good tight ends, at least in the collegiate game. So the fact that Tommy Trumbull never got there in college football as a mid to top tier tight end from a receiving standpoint concerns me about what his ceiling is as a receiver overall.
I think that's a very good explanation, but I think we see similar and just maybe a little bit of difference, but I love Brevin Jordan. There is no doubt about that. So basically we have the same guys going one and two, just kind of flip them around, and you're probably going to be much more closer to being right than I am. Number three for me real quick, and I'll make this quick, Penn State's Pat Freiermuth. I think really, you know, a pretty good athlete. From what I saw and what I remember, a pretty good pass catcher in terms of catching most everything that was thrown his way, good wingspan, all of that good stuff. Again, I'm not sure if he's a great blocker in line or anything like that, but if you're looking to run a dynamic offense, a lot of offenses in today's NFL, look at the Buccaneers and what they're able to do with Gronk and Brady. Look at what San Francisco has tried to do. You have to have two guys that can catch the ball, and I could just look at Pat Freiermuth and Logan Thomas being 1-2 and catching a lot of passes from presumably Ryan Fitzpatrick. And don't forget, Thomas is a free agent after this upcoming year. So whoever you're drafting here, you're ideally kind of looking at maybe being the top pass catching tight end within the first year of his NFL career.
Yeah, absolutely. Freiermuth would absolutely be a good consolation prize if they missed out on Trumbull or Brevin Jordan. I went a different direction. I kind of went, my third guy is a guy that I would like to see them draft along with either Brevin Jordan or Tommy Trumbull, maybe even double dip into the tight end pool, and that's a late day guy. Sixth round, maybe seventh round, depending on how the tight end board really falls. But Noah Gray out of Duke is a guy that I put as my number three option for those reasons. And look, I'll just tell you right now, he's a receiving tight end. He is not a blocker right now. I wouldn't necessarily question his willingness to block. I just don't know if there's ever going to be really a blocking scheme in there for him or a blocking duty in there for him. But this is a guy, he was a leader on his team in Duke, and watching him at the Senior Bowl, he stood out. One for effort, but two also for some athletic ability. So when you're looking at those late round guys, you're looking for special teams contribution. He's a guy who's got some length in there. He's willing to stick his nose in there and get dirty, and he's got the athletic ability to get downfield fast if you need him in some sort of a coverage formation or making a play on a guy that's screaming down the field back at you. Whatever you need him to do, he's going to do it. But then he catches the ball really, really well. So when you look at a six-round draft pick, you want a guy who does something really well. We'll try to work on the rest to see if we strike gold in the sixth round, right? If he doesn't make the roster, no GM is going to get fired because six-round draft pick didn't make the final roster. You know what I mean? So when I look at Gray, he catches the ball really well. He's a really good receiver, really polished receiver. Let's see if we can get some extra out of him. But if we can't, if anything, we've got a really big guy who has really good receiving skills. If we get matched up against a small defense, maybe we put him on there on a couple special plays, a couple special packages, and he can do some things for us.
All right, so real quickly recapping, David Harrison's top three at tight end, Brevin Jordan out of Miami, Tommy Trumbull from Notre Dame, and Noah Gray from Duke for the Washington football team. Again, this is not top three overall, and my top three is Tommy Trumbull, Brevin Jordan 1-2, and then Pat Freiermuth, Penn State number three. All right, that's going to do it for us on this particular episode of the Locked On Washington Football Team podcast. We'll have a very nice comment coming up from one of our great listeners on the next episode. But David, good to have you back in the fold. We will be with you again as the week unfolds and more moves come about. This is the Locked On Washington Football Team podcast.